Hello. Welcome to the sound show. Ooh, I don't see any level meter. I need that. I need this pin. All right. Hear my alarm going off? It happened because I put it on snooze instead of just stopping the alarm when I first heard it this morning. So I gotta turn that off. Or else it'll go off for 15 minutes. So I'm afraid there's going to be a little dead air. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do something I have not done. Well, no. Yeah, I'll play one of my own songs. How about that? So, because I still have, yeah. All right, so let's go into music. And then I've got, let's see, I think, yeah, a category, Tygen music. All right, so why don't you listen to Minions of Satan while I go turn off the alarm. That was Minions of Satan, and I played it just so I could get my turn off my alarm. Anyway, I'm stoned on Christmas Day. Not terribly stoned, but slightly. So, Merry Christmas. I thought I would do an acoustic guitar show where I've got two mics. And I'm kind of back from the keyboard, and I really can't do anything with the computer unless I totally change my configuration and decide I want to make this a keyboard show or an electric guitar show. I can still put effects on, but I can't, they'll be in my voice too. And also, I can't put effects on in the broadcast software anymore because I no longer have Guitar Rig, which was like one of those funny Apple, they call them audio unit plugins, and they work with like many different pieces of music software. And like if a piece of software supports audio unit plugins, your one thing that you have will propagate to like every software you have. So I got this thing for Logic Pro, and they ended up working with broadcast software too, which was helpful. But now I don't have it anymore because I got a new Mac. Let's make sure I'm in tune here. That fifth sounds a little sus, but normally that fifth is a little sus. And even that octave. Yeah, it's definitely flat. But I find often that, like, if the top strings are a little flat in comparison to the low E, then it often will sound better in other places with this guitar. And I think that's actually a tuning problem that's kind of consistent. Like, a lot of guitars have that. So that's pretty perfect. Here's the octave. I guess that's pretty on, don't you think? I mean, shit, what do you want? That fourth sounds iffy, eh? I can hear some beats. I can hear some beats, dude. If I stretch it up even more. Yeah, this fourth is sharp. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. My only choice, because I already adjusted my B string and my E string, is to sharpen my G string. And that can always be dangerous, because let's check this bottom third here with the E major chord. That sounds almost too good. That third is flat, therefore kind of a better third. Check this fifth on the string, and this will probably be a bit flat. Yeah, not very flat. So I just want to raise the G string a fucking tiniest little micron of a hair. Let's try that. No, the fourth here. And that's a little. But fourths are supposed to be a little bit sharp, an almost imperceptible amount sharp. They're balanced thusly by the tempered system. But you can't really hear it. Like if you tune to a perfect fourth versus a tempered fourth, I can't hear the difference between those two things. So if I tune a guitar using the harmonics to a perfect fourth, it's pretty close. But this third sounds sharp to me. Because there are too many beat tones. It's for too wobbly a third. So I'm going to go by the third here. Definitely that fourth fret unison sounds sharp. Second note is sharp, but let's see. Yeah, you know, I think I gotta flatten this. Good enough, right? I think so. Yeah, that fourth is good. Christmas, that's right. I was toying with the possibility of doing like a Christmas show where I just sang and played Christmas carols the entire show. I don't know. Should I do it? Oh. Now here I have to reach the keyboard, and I just said that it would be hard, so I wouldn't do it. Let's see. But I'll do it for you. Herald angels sing chords and lyrics. Okay. It always goes to Ultimate Guitar. Ultimate-guitar.com seems to rule the Google search results for guitar, tab, and chords. I find chords way more useful than tab because, I mean, tab is actually, it takes some cognitive processing power to read. But chords is just a letter. So I have this idea of G. G can be many things. G can be this. It can be this. It can be this. I don't know. Many. Yeah, I played up here. So it, as long as you got those three notes, the G, B, and the D in there, you're playing a G chord. So it's got some more flexibility, like you see the G. Hark, that would hark the herald. Is that? No, that says D. Hark, hark the herald angels sing. Yeah, that's it. Sing glory to the newborn king. Peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. Joyful all ye nations rise, join the triumph of the skies. With angelic host proclaim, Christ is born in Bethlehem. Hark, hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn king. Okay, that's all I'm going to do. One verse. That's your Christmas treat for Christmas Day. So, yeah, we're not doing anything really today. We did our Christmas vacation already. We went to Point Reyes area, Tomales Bay. It's kind of underwhelming. Tomales Bay is basically just a 60-foot deep, mile wide, 15-mile long inlet in the Pacific Ocean, and it's totally calm. You can't, although when there's fog coming in, you can't see the other side. So you can pretend you're just on a huge, very calm lake. You can pretend you're on Lake Superior. But yeah, in order to get to the actual ocean, you've got to drive anywhere from 20 minutes to 40 minutes to get to some beach hikes on this kind of national preserve type area of land. Just, I don't know what you call it, like a little peninsula or something on the other side of the bay, the other side of Tomales Bay. The skinny part of the land surrounding the inlet. Play the exact same thing every single sound show. Play the same beef stew. I guess there are things that I've played before or that are part of my beef stew that I haven't sampled in a while. Oh, I fucked that up. My finger's down in the wrong place. Thank you. 8:16. Okay. What's another Christmas? Joy to the World. I think they're all going to be in G. Very interesting. Well, that's really a very friendly key for acoustic guitar. Joy to the World. Let's try just Joy to the World chords, and maybe the lyrics will be there anyway. Yeah. So that starts in G, like it all. Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare him room. And this is still G. And heaven and nature sing. And heaven and nature sing. And heaven and heaven. That sounds weird. And heaven and heaven. Maybe. Heaven and heaven. And nature sing. That sounds right, but that C is kind of bizarre there, I think. But anyway, we're just doing one verse, so you don't have to suffer any longer. Take a chance on me. Playing a random finger guitar. I do it quicker. Fun times! Good times, noodle salad. Okay. What Does Christmas Mean to Me? By DJ Barnacle. Well, I got a lot of presents when I was younger. I was kind of spoiled by like a big extended family, and I was the only child. So Christmas was this huge event where I would just get like bombarded with all these, you know, Lego-ish kind of gifts. Yeah, I like trucks, robots, Legos, you know, things like that. Very typical, like, little boy stuff. So then I guess that changed when I became a teenager. I don't remember that transition. And now Christmas is just, ever since then, Christmas has been kind of low-key. So it'll never match that the pitch it reached when I was a kid. But I don't know. So then, like, the other thing is a lot of people don't like Christmas because it brings on depression or bad feelings or something. And I think it's like these expectations they have of Christmas is gone by. They should all be maybe that wondrous or nice. And they can never, I don't know, maybe that's not it. Maybe it varies from person to person why they don't like Christmas. I'm pretty sure that I don't. The only real bad feelings I have about it are like when other people have bad feelings about it, and I like can kind of read their mental their emotional position, and that kind of makes me go, Christmas. Well, like I'll be kind of glad when it's over. Like it's been going in a way it's been going on for a month. Like the first Sunday of Advent, and then right after Thanksgiving is when the decorations go up. So we've been kind of in the Christmas groove since I would say December 1st, you know, around then, right after Thanksgiving. And so I think, like, I supposedly there are 12 days of Christmas, and you take down your decorations 12 days after Christmas. But I think that if you've been celebrating for a month already, you've had it on your mind for a month, you could take it down on the 26th on Boxing Day, on the famous Boxing Day, which is tomorrow. Maybe that's the thing, is we're just we're all anticipating Boxing Day. That's tomorrow, man. I didn't hear about it until I moved to Canada. And I guess it's like a gift to the poor type holiday, because you have... It sort of counters the material excess of Christmas a little bit. You know, you have all the shit, then, oh, the next day you feel guilty and you give them all away to the poor. You give away your robotics. Robotics. I feel like I need to play that commercial, but I won't. I will, actually. You know, and that's actually something I think that I can do. I don't think... Yeah, I think I can play commercials. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to play the old robotics commercial. I just like the way the little machine sings. Robotics, robotics, robotics. All toy commercials. I don't need to do that. I think I need to do this. There's a 30-second one from 1985, which is right when I was peak child.
Who puts the future in your hands?
Robotics!
Who gives you robots to command?
Robotics!
Who lets you build fighting creatures wilder than a movie feature?
Robotics!
You create them, you control them. Who puts the future in your hands?
Robotics!
Who gives you robots to command?
Robotics!
R2000 comes with what you see here. Batteries not included. R1000 sold separately by Milton Bradley.
Milton Bradley. No, don't play again. Ah! I was screwed up. Anyway, that was the robotics commercial. So I'll be sued now by Milton Bradley. I wonder if they're still around. Are Milton Bradley still in existence? Milton Bradley. They got a Wikipedia. A Milton Bradley Company. That's what I need. Milton Bradley was a person. The Milton Bradley Company was... was an American board game manufacturer established by Milton Bradley, the person, in Springfield, Massachusetts in 1860, before the Civil War ended. I don't know when the Civil War started. I think it was around 1860. Then it ended in 1865, I know that. But I think it started around 1859 or something like that, or 61, I don't really know. But it was pretty short. So yeah, right around the beginning, in the cradle of the Civil War, Milton Bradley started the Milton Bradley Company. And in 1920, it absorbed the game production of McLaughlin Brothers, formerly the largest game manufacturer in the United States. Since 84, oh, I see, it has been a division of Hasbro. So Hasbro ate them in 84. And they say Hasbro is an American multinational conglomerate. Oh, my God. With toy, board game, and media assets. Headquartered in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Interesting. So you want to go to Pawtucket and tour the Hasbro headquarters? The logo is not familiar to me. It's a book. It's like a book or stack of papers with the name of the company and like a smiley face underneath it, or it could be a crescent moon. I've never seen that before, oddly enough. I mean, this is this huge company that's going to sue me for playing the robotics commercial, and I should learn what their logo looks like so that when the letter comes in the mail, that what is this they call it, the subpoena, or the servants, when the guy comes to serve you. A lawsuit, I'll recognize the Hasbro logo immediately on the papers that I'm tricked into accepting. I think I always wonder about that. Like when people are being served papers, like if they see the person coming, go, ha ha, and they run out the other side of the house. I mean, there's got to be some kind of legal recourse for that. It can't be like a loophole to escape being served papers. Oh, well, you damn it, he got away again. So I don't really know how that works. That'd be something, I don't know, for a more dedicated person to research, or a person at least who could reach his keyboard to research. Anyhow, Hasbro made, they bought Milton Bradley, who purchased, no, who, Hasbro bought Milton Bradley, who made robotics, which was the commercial I just played. So, Oh, and I already played one of my own songs. I played Minions of Satan. What did you guys think of Minions of Satan? That was kind of my most popular thing among my friends that I did. I think I was probably late 20s when I did that, like 27, something like that. It sounds like something a teenager would do, but I had kind of a case of arrested development, I think. Like I was about 10 years behind. So I think when I was 27, I was kind of more like an 18-year-old. I don't know. Anyway, so the Minions of Satan. Yeah, and it was like, and then I kind of made the discovery that the funny things, or the things with like sort of the Weird Al-ish, they might be giants-ish, kind of the things with a little bit of more of a structure and some humor or self-awareness are more popular. That's, you know, the ones people notice. They seem to notice more. So that can mean a couple of things. That can mean that just my earnest pieces, quote unquote, just aren't that good. So they never just attracted any attention. And what I do best is just kind of, or do better than that, is basically parody, which is, you know, that's okay, I suppose. Do I have any other songs? I could make this a Barnacle Music Hour. Okay, this is a whole album called Best of Tygan. I'll dox myself. And then here's the second track. Kind of interesting. The guitar is pretty rudimentary. Like, it's not very good guitar playing. Like, there's a lot of hesitancies and little mistakes and little flubs and stuff like that happening. And I guess it was kind of creative playing, but there's sort of a desperation to it, I thought. I don't know. I don't think it was that. And there's the old thing, like, are you playing melodies or are you just playing scales? So, I don't know. I guess, like, I had come up with that chord progression and just thought it was kind of new agey. So I ran it through a phaser. And then I had this drum machine, this Alesis SR16, I remember. This was a long time ago. This was maybe before the year 2000. This was maybe in the previous century. So, no, is that right? Yeah. Yeah, in the previous millennium, sorry. Yeah, the previous millennium. So, maybe it was around, I think probably, You know what? Yeah, this was before a brain injury. So this was probably 96 or something like that, like 1996. The oldest thing I have is from 1994. I can play that. Actually, that's pretty cut. It's in a way, it's my favorite thing on my whole site. Well, that's not really true. I don't know. Maybe it is. It's interesting, though. As I really, like, I didn't have any preconceived notions of what a song, what a thing I recorded on. So I don't know. I guess my idea was kind of jazz international, and I wanted to really take advantage of the multi-tracking. So this is like the first thing that I have recorded when I bought my four-track. And I think, yeah, in 1994. So it was a tape four-track. It just worked with regular. You could buy kind of special tapes that were like thicker or higher quality or something that wouldn't break. I don't know, but it would work with any tape. And then it recorded two tracks on one side of the tape, and then two tracks on the other side, and had playheads like on both sides of the tape, so it plays back the whole thing. And then you can master it down to a regular tape later, or whatever kind of music storage medium you have. Like you could technically plug a four track and master it down to an MP3. But anyway, so this, and I named it Caracas, like after the Venezuelan city, because it sounded kind of Latin to me. Anyway, it's five and a half minutes long, so let's listen to Caracas. Thank you. then I faded out. That's interesting that I was trying to imagine my thought process at the time. So this is 1994. I was 19 years old. I think I had also just gotten that Fender Telecaster. And I guess my idea was to do like a double track thing where I'd provide one track would be kind of an improvised quasi melody line, whatever. And the other one would be kind of guitar sound effects, like a strumming, dry strum, a lot of dry strums and harmonics. And kind of just explosive, and that kind of shuffle, that tuneless slide. I kind of like that part in the song, in the tune, rather. So yeah, that was Caracas. It goes on. It's clearly, I mean, it's not like I read this is from a score. You know, this is just 5.5 minutes of improvising. So yeah, and I don't know which guitar track I did first. Probably the melody-ish one, the one that's more discernible notes and less just like dry strums and slides and stuff, and dry strums, slides, and harmonics. Basically, I think that's essentially what the second guitar track is. And then there was this funny drum machine beat. This kind of I thought it sounded kind of Latin. It had claps in there. It might have some shakers. Let's listen to the, just see if we can suss out what's in the drum beat. He has some bongos. And this cymbal crash at the end of the beat cycle. Try to do it again. A couple claps at the beginning. One clap. And one cymbal. Oh, and there's a hi-hat there, I think. Yeah, tick, tick, tick. There's a tick, tick. All right, so that's Caracas. And it's now 8:39, 20 minutes to go, so. Ho, ho, ho. My stepsister suggested that my stepfather and I watch Elf as a Christmas movie. So we did. And I thought it was kind of dumb. I know it's supposed to be dumb, but it's also just dumb. So it's like, yes, you can presuppose a self-awareness there by the creators. That's the only way I think they could excuse that, is if they were implying that they're aware how dumb they are and that they're laughing at themselves. I think, yeah, that's the only way I think you can accept that Elf was ever made. So anyway, it's a Will Ferrell movie. When did it come out? 90s sometime. Or maybe late 90s. Anyway, so yeah, it's about Buddy the Elf. So we sat through it. And it was not only was it kind of a bad, stupid movie, in my opinion, but it also had really bad audiovisual problems. Like the copy we were watching, we watched it on 123 Movies, which is this Vietnamese copyright infringing site. So I guess they're free from prosecutorial reach because they're in another country. This is a Vietnamese company that hosts the site, and I don't know how the whole DNS system works, but it's like they have a 123. If they keep changing their domain, so that's kind of suspicious in and of itself. So I think people have tried. People are very aware that they exist, like I guess basically American media companies or the quasi, the RIAA of movies, whatever. I think that's the motion picture, so MPAA maybe is aware of it and has tried to take it down. But I think it's pretty safe from an end user perspective. Like, I don't think you're going to get in trouble for, you're not saving anything on your hard drive. It's just a streaming, so you're not really downloading the movie. You're not, in a sense, I guess, I don't know. I don't know if those kinds of arguments, like, I remember hearing when Napster was around, whatever, you have file sharing, the early file sharing days, people said, well, it's not stealing because you're making a copy, you're copying it. And I don't know, I mean, and that's such obvious, like, semantic trickery. Like, you really are missing the point if you say that, or if you believe that. That's your main argument, that saying that file sharing is okay. So I wonder if that's kind of the same thing with motion picture. Like, if you see, you're not really copying the file onto your hard drive, you're just streaming it. But I guess from a technical perspective, they would have a hard time prosecuting you if there's not any evidence of anything you did. I guess your ISP would be aware that you're streaming media from a website from a, that's known, but they don't know what you're streaming, I don't think, unless it's in the URL. I don't know. Like, I'm kind of talking out over my head here, but at any rate, I think most people, like in BitTorrenting, I think people know that that's bad. Although there was a thing when I was in Canada, they explicitly said they will not go after just downloaders. They will, their focus is on the uploaders, people that are sharing a lot of movies. And I don't think that's, I think in the United States, they have said maybe at this time, we're not going after just downloaders, but we reserve the right to do so in the future. And it's still bad. Don't do it. You know, you don't get a moral pass on this, but maybe it's sort of a, and you don't even necessarily get a legal pass. But for now, you probably will be okay if you're just an end user, if you're not an uploader. So I don't know. But, this is after BitTorrent was kind of more in the popular consciousness. Then you started getting these streaming sites. I remember watching streaming sites back in 2010 or so, and I was in Canada, and I remember I needed a bigger internet budget, data budget, because I needed to watch my Star Trek. So it was really great. I really enjoyed watching it. Then of course this is before Netflix. Netflix came along, and Netflix has Star Trek on. So I still watch that from time to time. I was watching some eps today of STNG with Dr. Crushaw. And I even did a full episode of the Sound Show devoted to Star Trek. So yeah, it's my nerd blackface. You know, that's how I pretend to be nerdy by saying I'm really into Star Trek, man. But I'm not even that into Star Trek. I mean, I just watch Next Generation endlessly. I can never get into Deep Space Nine. I never really got into Enterprise. I was into Voyager. That was back when it was being broadcast on TV. That was like before the internet kind of took over television. This was like in the early 2000s, so you'd still go into your living rooms where your TV would be plugged in to cable or to the aerial. I think we just had just an aerial TV. I don't think we had cable. This was in Catonsville near Baltimore back in the very early 2000s, like around the year 2000. So yeah, I'd watch Star Trek. I think, that's not possible. I had a black and white TV. I don't know. We had a black and white TV for a really long time. No, that's not possible. No way. I'm getting it mixed up with like those kind of, I guess it was like an 18-inch or 17-inch, maybe 24-inch colored cathode ray tube television set. And they always seemed to cost around $200. And I even brought one of those with me when I went to school up in Canada. And then I ended up getting rid of it there. I think that was, I almost feel like I'm one of the, and then in 1985, the family got its first colored television. So we're always a little bit behind the curve for, like, I was late on cell phones too. The only reason I got one was because this service that I use demanded it, because they wanted to use the Google Authenticator. And there's no way you can just, it's an app. It is a smartphone app. So there's no way you can use that service and authenticate yourself unless you own a smartphone. And they didn't seem to get that. They just presumed, like, the tech support was clearly not native English speaking. And they just didn't get, they thought that my problem was I didn't trust Google or something. I didn't want to use Google. It was just a big clusterfuck. So I was forced to get my phone. I got it for $300 on Woot. Oh gosh, in 2017, I guess it was. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, is that possible? Yeah. Yeah, it was certainly, it was after I moved to California. Yeah, I was. Everyone had one in like 2010. Well, not everyone, many people had them. I would say half of people had them in 2010. I don't know, I'm sure there's statistics you can find for this. Gosh. Okay. Oh, my friend in Maryland has sent me a recipe for peppermint brownies. She would make them every year. She's my friend's mom, a kind of a family friend. So she'd make peppermint brownies every year, and that was a Christmas thing. But yeah, okay, maybe I will make them now. It's kind of like a mix of brownie and like toothpaste. It's like really strong, light-colored mint stuff, but it's very good. It's like toothpaste in a good way. It's like really, they're good. They're chocolate and mint brownies. They're kind of addictive. So I may take her up on that. She sent me this recipe and I may do that. So tomorrow, take down the Christmas decorations and that'll be, so I think the Christmas day itself is really like, well, Christmas is almost over. It's about to end. We can finally, we can stop this torture. But it hasn't been bad. I mean, I don't do a whole lot for Christmas. My mom kind of went nuts. She decorated. She liked to decorate. And my aunts, her sisters, they like to make things, like make a, and I do this thing every year. I put up the family creche, you know, it's a nativity scene. Not everyone knows the word creche, I discovered. It's a little bit of a strange word. It's a French C-R-E-C-H-E. And there's like a backwards slanting accent on the first E. And I forget what that means. Like, I think that's a pronunciation thing. I don't know. That's something I should know. But anyway, so a creche in English. I don't know how they say it in French, except for they do the French throat R. But I don't know if the phonemes are identical. The eh, if it's an eh sound, creche, I guess they would say. I don't know. I wonder if French pot smokers have difficulty because their throats get really dry and they can't make their R's. Okay. All right. I'm gonna play more music. Come on, you fucking computer. It's weird. Sometimes I can't get the dock. Is that what you call it? The dock? Yeah. To show up. It ignores the mouse being at the bottom of the screen. I'm gonna sue Steve Jobs. Okay, some of this is so embarrassing. I don't want to play it because I know what it is. All right, let's play it anyway. I'll torture myself. Okay, this one is called "Go for the Volume," but it doesn't have any vocals. I had one of this that was super embarrassing that had vocals, and it actually had meaningful lyrics. And luckily, you'll never know what those are. This is an instrumental version. You know, I think maybe the vocal version is better, but I was so embarrassed by it, I replaced it with this, which is not as interesting. Like, this was the chorus, and now it's just a chord, guitar playing chords, and then like a pseudo bass, using the guitar as a bass. Mix it down and play it low. A little random Slayer solo there. That was kind of good, actually. I like that. The random solo there. A lot of these are like very common electric guitar tropes that I learned. Then I get cut off there. Yeah, I didn't. And this is made with a 4-track. I think this is the. I'm gonna put the year on this. It's like 1995. Yeah, this is old. maybe 96, but certainly not after that. It's kind of fun. The guitar playing is funny. It's interesting. It's because I'm trying to do way more than I'm capable of doing. But there's something kind of charming about that, I guess. It has a lot of energy to it that I don't really play with anymore. There's a guitar trope, a Pink Floyd solo trope. All right, that was The Volume. The title is The Volume Instrumental. So, I don't know, dude. I think the vocal version was better, but I was so embarrassed, I think, back in whatever, the late 90s, about putting this on this album that I put together with my friend. That's right. I remember that was part of this whole thing. Oh, yeah. So many memories. Memories like fingerprints are slowly something you wouldn't recall. My balls. That's not what he really says. He says, you wouldn't recall. And then, I'm not my former. That's a Pearl Jam song. Elderly woman behind the counter, behind a counter, or the counter. Elderly woman behind the counter in a small town. I believe that's what the title is. Verbatim. And I like the chord there. It's a G. It's just a G, a C9, and a D. Just a very super simple folk guitar chords in the key of G. And then he does his Eddie Vedder voice. So, and he's kind of the lyrics are kind of, reminiscing or kind of, you know, it's like a homecoming. My God, it's been so long. Something didn't dream you'd return, but now here you are, here I am. I don't know how he does, to imitate Eddie Vedder, you kind of have to curl your tongue up in the middle of your mouth. Here I am, here you are. I think it's just like it's the curled tongue suspended in mid-mouth style of rock vocals. And I think it was even kind of a trend back when, I think Pearl Jam, I don't know. I'm going to say they were the originators of that. And then, but I don't know. It would be pretty hard to sing that way and have people not say you're trying to sound like Eddie Vedder. I guess Chris Cornell to some degree. No, I don't think he really did that. I don't think that's not fair to Chris Cornell. Did Lane Staley, the Alice in Chains guy, do it? Yes, I think he did kind of do that same thing. I think that, I think Eddie Vedder and Lane Staley were a little bit, they had the curled tongue suspended in mid-mouth rock vocal delivery style. So, there you have it. Oh, you want to play the funniest thing I've ever made? It's called Tracheotomy.
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 Very loud final guitar growl. That was Tracheotomy. And I made this because I was applying to a super artsy liberal arts college called Bennington College. You may have heard of it. It's in Vermont. And I think maybe at the time it had the notoriety of being the most expensive college in the whole country. And my guidance counselor had suggested it to me, had mentioned it. I guess she thought it would suit me regardless of cost. Like they didn't do grades there. So I don't know. Make of that what you will. But I applied there with like this portfolio that included like artwork and music and some writing and stuff like that. So I made this specifically, that piece, Tracheotomy, expressly for my application to Bennington College back in the late 90s. Who knows? Late 90s, to say. I don't know when I did that. It was around that time. And it's super, like, it's someone trying to be contemporary art, which is exactly what I was doing. It's an 18-year-old kid saying, okay, what is my caricatured, weird idea of what contemporary art, this realm that I'm not a part of, that I have no access to, that I haven't been accessing, but that I somehow think is what I should be aspiring to? What do I think that sounds like, or that would sound like? So, and then when that thought process then gives rise to, like, this, it's ridiculous. It's so pretentious. Tracheotomy, and there's like somebody breaking glass. I mean, it's funny, especially when like the really high pitched ones that go by. That tracheotomy. I mean, it's a self parody, but I didn't really intend it that way at the time. I was desperately trying to be contemporary art. Let's play hear it again.
Tracheotomy.
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 The little chipmunk ones crack me up. And then I kind of like that final guitar growl though, where I do a volume variation. Anyway, that's like the whole show. Guys. Merry Christmas from DJ Barnacle to you. I hope you had a nice Christmas, including Advent, and have a happy new year. I'll be back next week. Yeah.